This is the Heritage Radio News, bringing you top food stories from down the street and around the world with your Heritage Radio News team, Erica Wides, Patrick Martins, Jack Kinsley on sports, and Mike Edison on weather.
Today is May 5th, 2016, Cinco de Mayo. I'm Erica Wides. Welcome to Heritage Radio Network News. I'm co-anchoring today along with Jack Kinsley, who's filling in for Patrick Martins. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Erica.
And our top stories this week, arsenic and old rice. Ugly is beautiful. And even the predator becomes the prey. And Jack, what have you got for us in sports today, too?
Well, Kobe Bryant may be gone from the NBA, but certainly not forgotten. And we will revisit some of his diet tricks that gave him such a long career later.
Oh, fascinating. And Mike, what's going on with the weather?
It is so weird out there, Erica. I can't even begin to tell you. Now I can't begin to tell you. Later, I'll begin to tell you.
I can't wait to
hear. It's weird.
Great. As always. And now for our top story this week. Is ugly food more nutritious? It looks like that may be the case. A 2014 review found that comparing organic produce to conventional, the organic had 20 to 40% higher antioxidant content. This is because organic crops are subject to more stress. They receive fewer pesticides in lower doses and with less potent killing effects. And that stress may be the key to your nutrition. Ugly, misshapen fruits and vegetables, which actually bear the scars of their stress, dimpled or scarred where they fought off an insect or plant infection, are apparently better for you too. Their blotches or scars don't harm their taste or infect humans. They're a result of the plant fighting off environmental assault and relying on its antioxidant defenses to do so. This is great news because we throw away over 40% of the food produced in the U.S., much of it simply for cosmetic reasons. One study showed that a scab-covered apple has more healthy antioxidant compounds than a scab-free fruit. Another showed that apple leaves infected with scab have 10 to 20% more phenolic compounds, and an additional research has found that high levels of resveratrol in grape leaves that are infected with a fungi or simply exposed to the stress of UV light. All these beneficial antioxidants both protect the plants and the humans who eat them. Martin L. Paul, a microbiologist, says that humans have our own built-in protective mechanisms which may be activated by the antioxidants in fruits and vegetables. The compounds trigger the activity of over 500 genes, most of which have cell protective functions. Around the world, the best-known longevity diets, such as the traditional Mediterranean and Okinawan, are rich in exactly these compounds and antioxidants and very high in fruit and vegetable consumption. So don't pass over that two-legged carrot or blotchy peach. Its homely appearance may be the key to your long, healthy life.
Wow, fascinating, Erica. Does that mean my ugly Instagram food photos are now cool?
Uh-huh, and more nutritious, too.
Awesome.
So you'll get a big dose of nutrition the uglier your Instagram feed is. It's a win-win for everybody.
Fascinating story. I wanted to follow up on your report last week. As you had said, Erica, tuna should not be on the top of your list if you're a sushi or a fish aficionado.
Or on your list at all.
Right. So, what can conscious eaters turn to? The answer is invasive species. That's right. Sushi restaurants are trending towards whelks, periwinkles, and other esoteric predators. As Florence Fabricant reported in the New York Times, Chef Bun Lai of Mia Sushi in New Haven is leading this movement and promoting a whole different side of sustainable fish. Because invasive species are non-native plants or animals, they cause harm for their invaded environments. According to Chef Lai, if diners choose to eat invasive species, it'll help restore balance to habitats destroyed by them. Chef Lai's restaurant offers destructive invasive species like lionfish, Asian carp, Chesapeake Bay blue catfish, wild Everglades seaweeds, and even feral pigs, making it truly one of a kind. His latest spot is the pop-up restaurant Prey in South Beach, and it pushes even further on this concept. Bun Lai told The Observer, quote, "It's not enough to make food that's tasty and beautiful. Food must also nourish and revitalize our bodies and souls while helping restore balance to our profoundly suffering planet. I'm fortunate to have partners for this pop-up that share in my culinary vision." Think about lionfish and how it's overtaken coastal waters along the U.S. eastern seaboard. Now think of it being served as succulent, sustainable sashimi. If things keep moving in this direction, you're not going to feel the guilt of Otoro, but the satisfaction of not only trying something new, but supporting nature at the same time.
You know, I actually met Bun Lai a few years ago at a sustainable seafood event, and he's a really cool guy. He told me all about his restaurant, and I've been meaning to go up there for a long time, but... New Haven's a little far for us.
HRN but, News field trip?
Perhaps. Let's get on the bus. Bun actually does a cool thing, too. He leased his own shellfishing grounds in the harbor, in the Long Island Sound. And so he shellfishes for his own, you know, mussels and clams and stuff like that to serve, because he wants his food to be not only sustainable but extremely local, if possible, too. So wow. Now he's shifted into invasive species, which is great. So thanks, Jack. That was really, really interesting. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have our fast food minute, so stay tuned.
Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
This is the Heritage Radio Network News. I'm Erica Wides, co-anchoring this week with Jack Inslee. And our Fast Food Minute is now coming to you, sponsored by Cane 5 Vineyard and Winery. And today on our Fast Food Minute, first off, we have Rachel, the producer.
Thanks, Erica. The time for coffee is meow, because Brooklyn is about to get its first permanent cat cafe this weekend. No Kitten, the location on Atlantic Avenue by the Brooklyn Bridge Animal Welfare Coalition, was the possum follow-up to their pop-up kitty coffee shop last fall. Cat people can buy prepackaged goods next door and then lounge around vying for the attention of an animal that barely tolerates you during the best of times and is now going to be overstimulated with people. In other news, if you're looking for me, you know where I will be.
From our resident punster.
Wow. So, Rachel, you know what's got two legs and sleeps with cats? Mrs. Katz. And sometimes Mrs. Nussbaum.
Wow.
What do you got for us, Jack?
I'll try to follow that up. The music world, of course, lost a titan when Prince passed away on April 21st at the age of 57. The Purple One had plenty of mystery surrounding his personality, but his diet was not so far out. His personal chef has come out to reveal some details about the reclusive genius's food habits, which included the routine of making himself scrambled eggs in the morning, living as a pescatarian, and having an affinity for pot stickers and teriyaki salmon. Few things can make Prince seem human, and I love the idea of him just scrambling his own eggs amidst the mystique of his otherwise otherworldly life.
You know, Jack, the Times this morning said Prince was a vegan.
Wow.
Conflicting reports.
Yeah, pescatarian.
Uh-oh. Mike, what have you got for us?
Pizza!
Oh.
And sometimes Mrs. Nussbaum. Come on, that was funny. Pizza. Is there not enough pizza in your pizza? Of course there isn't. How could there possibly be enough pizza in your pizza, especially here at Roberta's? But now, not only can you eat the pizza, but you can eat the box it came in. This is like a dream for me, Erica. Yeah, Vinny's Pizzeria in Williamsburg. Now is a box made of pizza, or it's more specifically a box with the lid is made of garlic bread and the bottom's made of Sicilian pizza. For me, this is like all my Willy Wonka dreams come true. You can really eat the dishes.
Maybe we can bury you in a coffin of pizza.
I think it'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
It'd be wonderful. Find me at hashtag pizza whore.
Wow.
Oh, you're done? That's it?
That's it.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes Mrs. Nussbaum.
And looks like another class action suit for Starbucks. The global coffee chain was sued last month for serving underfilled lattes. And now another suit has been filed claiming that Starbucks ice drinks are a ripoff. Surprised. As if you needed a lawyer to confirm that. To quote the legal filing, a Starbucks customer who orders and pays for a venti iced coffee, expecting to receive 24 fluid ounces of iced coffee based on Starbucks advertising and marketing, will instead receive only about 14 fluid ounces of iced coffee. Anyone who has purchased an iced drink at Starbucks in the last decade will be eligible for compensation in the suit. Did you guys save your receipts from all those iced coffee purchases? I hope so. Ka-ching. You can cash in on that. Now, I personally would like to sue Starbucks on behalf of the planet. By the way, for the billions of plastic cups that overflow every New York City trash can every hot summer day. How do we get a lawyer for that suit? Anybody have Jackie Child's phone number?
Oh, boy.
That was the fast food minute.
Quick update on the Prince story. Oh, yeah. He was a pescatarian at the time that chef worked with him, became a vegetarian later.
Oh, okay. In Times they said vegan this morning, right. But whatever.
Who knows?
All right.
Always
well,
changing, Prince.
Fast food minute brought to you this week from Cane 5 Vineyard and Winery. We're going to take a short break and we'll come back with more. Oh, what about poisonous rice being fed to babies? Well, you'll hear about that after this.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News. I'm Erica Wides. This is broadcast from behind Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Now, for nearly a century, rice cereal has been the first solid food American babies are fed. It's seen as a simple, safe, and nutritious staple food, primarily because of marketing by the cereals industry telling us that. Surplus grains due to farm overproduction have long been turned into cereals and other processed grain products and sold to the American market as ideal food for children. Turns out it may also be slowly poisoning American babies. Multiple studies have found that rice-based foods contain traces of arsenic, and sometimes the levels are surprisingly high. A new study published in JAMA Pediatrics that finds babies who are fed rice cereals and other rice-based snacks like puffs and crackers have higher concentrations of arsenic in their urine compared with infants who are not fed rice. The highest arsenic concentrations were among those who consumed infant rice cereal, says researcher Margaret Carrigas, an epidemiologist at Dartmouth. Among those babies who ate rice snacks, levels were about double that of non-rice eaters. The study was based on data from the New Hampshire Birth Cohort Study, where researchers analyzed the eating habits of about 750 infants of mothers in the study. Carrigas says, "We knew rice cereal was a common first food, but we didn't really know how common it was or what age it was introduced. By age one, about 80% of babies had been introduced to rice cereal, usually starting at 4 to 6 months. We were surprised by the number of infants consuming rice products," Carrigas continued. The authors also write in their paper that emerging evidence suggests that arsenic exposure in utero and during early life may be associated with adverse health effects on the immune system and the brain. Earlier this month, the FDA proposed a limit of 100 parts per billion for arsenic in infant rice cereal. Health officials worry most about inorganic arsenic. This occurs naturally in soil and is absorbed by the rice plant. The FDA statement points to research that links exposure to inorganic arsenic early in life to decreased performance on certain developmental tasks. The FDA says that rice doesn't need to be the only or first source of grain in your baby's diet. Other sources include oats, wheat, and barley. Any high-quality actual food, finely chopped or pureed, is ideal for babies and toddlers, exposing them to a wide variety of tastes and nutrients and lessening their exposure to arsenic.
Wow. Concerning stuff, Erica.
Yeah, and, I know.
Speaking of babies with questionable diets,
yeah.
Here's Mike Edison
this is
with
what
the
you
weather.
Turn into.
All right. Thanks, Jack. Well, it's May, and spring has finally sprung, and the sun is out. Well, kind of, sort of. I mean, tornadoes continue to rip up the Midwest. El Nino looms large over California. And seriously, who the hell knows what's going on in New York? It seems to change every 5 minutes here. As an on-air weather personality, I am, frankly, at a loss trying to predict the weather, which, you know, I suppose it's about par for the course, because even real meteorologists get it wrong plenty. Reporting the weather is like baseball, where a 30% success rate at the plate is considered excellent. Well, Mark Twain once said that in the spring, I have counted 136 different kinds of weather inside of 24 hours. And that is definitely what's going on here in New York, in Bushwick at least. Rain followed by bright sunshine, within 5 minutes only to be obscured by clouds. 70-degree days followed by freezing nights. The only thing we can be sure of is that night is dark and day is bright. But given the increasing amount of particulate in the air, I mean, how long can I even be sure of that? And the more crap in the air, the more carbon emissions go unchecked, the more you can count on your food being polluted as well. Dirty air means dirty water, means more dirt in, well, the dirt, and suddenly your farm-to-table chain is not so clean. Add to that the damage being done by excessive rain or drought, all becoming wildly unpredictable, and what you've got is a disaster on your hands. So once again, I'm sorry to say, there is no good news in the weather department. But bikini season is coming up, and along with the skin cancer season. So, yeah, we're all going to die. Back to you, Erica.
Mike, is it ever going to be, maybe 1 week we'll get a positive report?
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to that week, too, Jack.
Thanks, Mike. As usual, our own little ray of sunshine, Mike Edison, with the weather. When we come back, we're going to have Jack Inslee talking about Kobe Bryant and his diet. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Wow.
Whoa.
I'll tell you, I feel really schizophrenic today. I guess I'll be Patrick introducing Jack, doing the sports.
You're Jack-trick.
But it is time for the sports report. I don't know about you guys. Obviously, I'm a big NBA guy, and you know, the playoffs are in full swing. Really exciting games going on, and a lot of look-backs at Kobe Bryant's career. Of course, one of the greatest ever to play the game. Kobe Bryant played his final game at the end of this year's NBA regular season. The Lakers, of course, not making the playoffs. And he scored 60 points in his retirement game. During these playoffs, he's been celebrated and remembered, but today we want to remember him not just for his game, but for his thoughtful diet. Kobe always had a connection to food. His dad's nickname was Jelly Bean, and his own name, Kobe, is of course a type of Wagyu beef. But what fans might not know is how food played a role in the final chapter of Kobe Bryant's career. 2012 is when he nixed pregame meals like pepperoni pizza and grape soda. Bryant told ESPN he ditched a few of his other favorites too, like sugar cookies and Sour Patch Kids, opting instead for fish, lean proteins, and vegetables. A bigger obstacle in Kobe's late career food makeover was the type of cooking oil that hotel chefs used, such as vegetable, soy, or canola oil. Tim DeFrancesco, his trainer, said, "A lot of the chefs are very accommodating. They'll say, hey, normally we use vegetable oil, and she'll work with them and say, would you mind using olive oil or grass-fed butter to cook with?" Another major secret to Kobe's late career success has been a trending topic amongst foodies, bone broth. The broth is a base for a wide variety of soups, minestrone, beef stew, chicken meatball chili, a 15-bean soup with kale, or what Bryant's favorite is, chicken tortilla soup. Bone broth has quietly but steadily become a daily staple of Bryant's diet over the past 3 years. It's the foundation of his pregame meal at home and on the road, and Lakers put in long hours to make sure it's carefully prepared for him at all times. "I've been doing the bone broth for a while now," Bryant said. "It's great. Energy, inflammation, it's great." His trainer says he's gone from in the past 2-3 years rolling his eyes and saying, "Trust me, I'm Kobe, I can eat a Big Mac and score 40. He's gone from that to all of a sudden saying, "Hey, I went to a restaurant, I saw they had grass-fed beef in there." It's on his radar now. So after games, some players eat their way through mountains of food, but not Bryant. To help him refuel his body, the Lakers turn to a low-sugar bottle of chocolate milk, one specially prepared by Whole Foods. So, as young players admire Kobe's 60-point retirement game and reflect on his career, they may want to take notes not only on his sweet jump shot, but his wise diet decisions.
Wow, thanks, Jack. I know nothing about sports, but I can totally respect that.
You can get down with that, right?
I can totally get down with that, yeah. And, you know, what a great role model for kids who are big sports fans.
All the kids are going to be asking for bone broth
that's
now.
That's great. Awesome. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a little slightly opinionated op-ed. We'll be right back after this.
Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of 3 Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News, broadcasting from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And now for our op-ed this week, me, your anchor, Eric Wise. There we go. So last month I attended a press event and lunch hosted by the Global Fried Chicken Behemoth, KFC, formerly known as Kentucky Fried Chicken. Uh-huh. We were invited to the event to be the first to hear of a major new initiative that the company was about to undertake and to be treated to a lunch cooked by KFC's corporate chef. Now, I RSVP'd, intrigued and excited, to hear what such a huge company would be announcing re their half century or so of selling fried, industrially produced factory farm chicken to the world. Certainly, in this era of major food companies stepping up to consumer demands for changes to their products, like the labeling of or non-use of GMOs, as Kellogg's and Mars have recently announced, or the removal of all artificial flavors and colors, as General Mills is now doing, a company like KFC, with over 4,300 U.S. stores and a global presence in over 100 countries, could easily follow suit and be a game changer in the process. I couldn't wait to hear the announcement. Were they going cage-free, switching to organic, non-GMO feed, introducing more vegetables to their processed carb-heavy menu, an animal welfare or sustainability initiative? I couldn't wait to hear. So I went to the event. But no, the big announcement at the event was that while KFC was booming abroad, in the U.S., fast food consumers were abandoning the brand because they felt like it wasn't the same old, same old. The stores didn't smell the same. The chicken didn't taste the same. So KFC revamped, retooled, and retrained, and are still now selling the same old factory farm, cheapest possible, poor quality food, but with a guarantee. They're calling it re-kernelization, and the chicken's taste is kernel guaranteed. They call it a new beginning. I call it a desperate and misguided plan in an era where the same old, just doesn't cut it anymore. Not to mention, everybody hates the new kernel.
Wow.
Wow. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, seriously. I was sitting at a table with all these food journalists, like, excited, thinking there was going to be something major, right. And it was like, nope. Here's your bucket.
I actually went to a KFC event one time. It was at the Friars Club. Okay, wait, here's the best part, because they were introducing their new roasted chicken.
Oh,
so they roasted a chicken at the Friars
awesome.
Club. I know it's rife with
chicken buns.
I guess the roasted KFC products.
Their puns are better than their food.
Man. They gave me, when I left there, they gave me this gift certificate for like $25 of KFC. Mm-hmm. And at some misguided stoned moment, I went over there. You have no idea what you can do with 25 bucks at KFC.
Well.
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing I live to tell the tale.
I would have given it to some homeless guy. Yeah.
Let's all go to Pies and Thighs now.
Okay. All right. Well, that wraps it up for us for Heritage Radio and Network News. Remember that you can find us online at heritageradionetwork.org and download us from iTunes and Stitcher. If you have any stories that you want to hear, you can email them to who are we emailing this week? Do we have an address? Jack@heritageradioinfo@heritageradionetwork.org.
And our own Patrick Martins will be back with us next week.
He will be back with us next week. So thanks for listening. That wraps it up for us here from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. We'll see you next week.